Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
It's the Drink Talking with the Thinking Drinkers, Ben McFarland and Tom Sandon, and Mistress of Wine, Sam Capon. All the booze news and views, from Absinthe to Zinfandel. Tall tales and cocktails.
Hello, everybody. Hello, listeners. This is It's a Drink Talking, a podcast all about drink. We are gathered here today. Again, we've been kicked out of our normal abode.
Have we done something wrong?
I don't know what it is. Yeah. I think you spilt your wine. I remember a couple of weeks ago, you were a bit clumsy. So I think we've been kicked out of there and we've moved into what I can only describe as a kind of budget penthouse flat with no furniture in it. But it's quite nice. We can see next door. We've got the Shoreditch skyline, a lot of cranes. Still building.
There's a lot of offices around. It's quite remarkable how, considering how thriving London is, to see how many vacant offices there are in the heartland of city.
A bit worrying, isn't it? Media. Thatcher's Britain. Oh, yeah. Thatcher's Britain. How are you doing, Sam?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
All right. Your eyes are looking absolutely gorgeous today. What have you done to your eyes? Your face is looking much better than it normally does.
Face today. What a lovely
it's
face.
The same face. Are you commenting on my eyelash extensions?
Look at them, so lush.
Yeah,
they're good. They just glue these fake eyelashes onto your real eyelashes. So you wake up in the morning.
That doesn't sound
It takes about an hour. And actually, they do have to stick something in your eye.
What, so they don't glue your eyes together?
Yes, which is slightly uncomfortable. It's a huge relief when that comes off, and your eyes do water quite a lot. But the advantage is you don't have to bother with any makeup.
No, but I don't either, so... And look at
But you've got good eyelashes.
What are eyelashes for?
Keeping dirt out of your eyes.
Yeah. If you find you're having less dirt in your eyes?
Definitely. Don't know, I did actually have quite a red eye this morning, so I wasn't sure.
So, well, they look beautiful.
Thanks.
What I like about it is that you can't tell what's so beautiful about it, but it definitely works.
Thanks.
Tom, you've got lovely eyelashes.
I've got lovely eyebrows because I had a haircut the other day and they cut my eyebrows again.
Did they really?
Which seems to be now a regular occurrence. No. She asked me if I'd like my eyebrows cut. Now, 2 years ago, this first happened to me and I said, no. Yeah. Why are you going to cut my hair? That's why I'm here. Well, do you want to cut my pubes as well? What are you going to cut? There's a lot of hair on my body. And they cut my eyebrows and then I realised
they
trim them. And once they've been there,
you can't go back. Yeah.
And good going over this time. I was quite impressed.
But I find that I often leave the hairdressers or the barbers and I'm like, oh, I forgot to ask them. And when you have your hair short, if you've got long eyebrows, they look even more ridiculous.
And your eyebrows are black versus your increasingly tidy grey
hair. I look like, is it Alistair Darling? That similar.
Hey, badger.
Yeah.
You look like a badger.
My eyebrows don't match my hair.
I always forget to ask them to put a mirror around the back of my head to check it's all
right.
Care.
It's in the back.
They never forget that.
No.
It's really useful.
Whenever they do that.
No. I don't like it. Let's get this podcast done quickly, guys.
Okay. We've got to get another room.
Fancying each other quite a lot this morning.
So this before we've even had a drink. So anyway, I'm hosting this shebang this week. We, as ever, kick off with Spit or Swallow. And I want to start with my spit. And this is something that's annoyed me for a while. I can't believe I've not mentioned it before.
Tom?
It's just Tom. It's totally Tom.
Tough.
No, it's kind of two things, really, combined together. It's Wackaging, which is wacky packaging, which is one thing that's annoying.
Have you just made that word
no,
up?
No, 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 it's
it
a thing.
Word?
There's on Twitter, put in hashtag wackaging, you'll see loads of different examples. Okay. But more than that, it's to make it more drink-related, it's chatty pub chalkboards.
Ooh,
you know when you're walking
yes,
down
yes,
the
yes,
street
yes, yes.
and there's like unattended children will be giving a coffee and a free kitten or husband creche or alcohol because no great story started with eating a salad or... the other one that really pissed me off.
Crash, that's really annoying.
Yeah, yeah. Free air guitar with every pint. If I ordered a pint and the guy behind or girl behind the bar did an air guitar...
You'd punch him.
Oh, no, I wouldn't. That's assault.
I mean, we... When
but it, I would leave.
Yeah. I used to work in a company set up a financial product called Egg. Listeners, this is this is gold. But every morning, the training instructor would come in and put, I get knocked down, but I get up again on a,
oh,
on
my
a stereo
God.
And do air guitar into the room.
Oh, my God.
Ricky Gervais mock too.
Yeah, well, it's that you I don't have ask. To be crazy to work here, but it helps thing. Yeah. But what inspired me was a mate called Tom, who I don't think listens to this podcast, but he WhatsApped me with this thing he saw in St. Margaret's, which is an area of West
posh
London.
Enclave
quite
of
posh,
Richmond.
Posh enclave of Richmond, yeah.
Great curry house there.
Yeah, they've got some good stuff, but there's a new company there called Holly & Co. I'm going to name and shame them because they're set up by the person who set up not on the highstreet.com, they're on the high street. So how'd you see that?
There's no way they'd ever sponsor us for anything.
I would refuse their money on this basis. This was on the A board outside the shop. When you buy from us, you buy from a small business and an actual person does a little happy dance. Be the cause of someone's happy dance today. Or you could burn a shop down. Yeah. Oh, it's just... Yeah, it's annoying. What I find annoying about this whole thing is it's all about being Instagrammed and being put on...
Also, can I be honest? A, it's humorless.
Yeah, it's not
and
even funny.
I do quite like humour. So that's just wank. B, it's not true. And C... It's almost like a little element of guilt when they're like, you know, come and buy from us, we're independent. Well, only because you've got millions from selling out to not on the high street.
Okay, shut up. Because this is this got me onto this wackaging thing.
Yeah.
Because it's the same kind of thing. Pret-a-Manger has on some of its bottles of like...
great sandwiches.
Or something. Great sandwiches. But they say best when chilled, as indeed we all are.
Ooh.
So annoying.
Chilled, dude.
It's just Cowabunga. So annoying. Sorry, one more from the beer world. Topless barmaids, free beer and false advertising. If I see that
one more time.
Topless
barmaids. Sexist.
Where is this?
No, free beer and false advertising.
Oh.
You see? Oh, Tom's not seen it before. He likes it.
No, I do, because I would have been in.
Yeah, you would have read, you
would have
read
the rest of it.
Just...
What? In this day and age?
Banging on a door at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, it's Browns of Shoreditch. Oh.
That isn't false advertising.
Is that a stripper's?
It is a strip joint.
It's just not funny. Why are you being treated like children? Mm. This is on Instagram or the Twitter, and it says, Monday should be a man. It always comes too soon. Nothing wrong with that.
It's a race, Ben. And I always come first.
Yeah.
The
in
only
your
reason
face,
people
not
are
in
so
face, the, not in face. Face.
The only reason they're so unhappy is because they lose again.
Yeah. I win again.
I do a happy dance when I win.
Anyway, stop treating us like children. Pub A boards should say what kind of beers they've got or spirits, whatever, the price, and that should be it.
What do you need one? It's a pub.
I know what's inside.
I hope
the other one that really annoys me. The other one really annoys me is like one arrow pointing away from the pub going, ooh, scary bears, and then an arrow going into the pub going, safety, drink, or something. It's just like...
Are we children?
Oh, okay. It's just annoying.
Well, so, I have to say, where I live, you don't get any of that rigmarole. It's
good.
Just,
you don't.
I think it's a London
thing. Around my way either.
And
our local pub
is
advertising the World Cup. We're going to be showing every
that's
game.
That's good. Yeah.
Ours advertises hot drinks and soup.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's the other one.
Useful.
But there is a soup of the day. It says whiskey. So that's annoying. And the wackaging thing was started by Innocent Smoothies. I went to their offices and they all walk around barefoot because all the floor was all kind of grass and everything.
The thing to do there is to go in there and just, like, before they get
take
in the
a
office,
dog.
Like, smash loads of glass on the floor.
Yeah. That'll show them.
You film it. Turn it
anyway, we've totally, really. Any chance of being sponsored by any of those people.
Yeah, Innocent, I like.
Died.
Just
yeah,
for
yeah.
the record.
Yeah. So, the humorous pub chalkboard. That's my spit.
Love it.
And my Swallow is a bar in the West End of Glasgow. confiscated mobile phones from punters. They just said no mobile phones.
Oh my God, I've been there.
Have you?
Yeah, you're not allowed to.
What's it called?
Give me a list of three and I'll have to pick it.
The King George.
Not that one.
Yeah,
you just made that.
King's Arms. Yeah.
Yeah, it's that one.
Yeah. The Red Lion or the Mallard.
It's
none of those, is it? Okay, it's called the Mallard.
Okay.
And it's on Great Western Road.
Before we go on, wait a minute. Now, if they are banning mobile phones, all I'd say is, are they offering any other reading material of any sort? Because
I
use my phone to read a paper while I'm waiting for my friends. I mean, say friends. No one's coming.
No.
I'm there on my own. But I like a pint and I read the paper. When a pub doesn't have a paper, I read my phone.
Okay,
I can understand.
So what they do here, upon entering the venue, customers will be required to deposit their phone into a box and will be able to retrieve it when they leave. I think, in principle, this is good because it encourages conversation, blah, blah, blah.
But I like to Instagram my drink as well.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's why they should get their phone and
shove
it up their
arse. They are copying another pub because, basically, I've definitely been... Some friends of ours live in Edinburgh and they've got a pub...
That's a different city.
That's why I didn't recommend.
Yeah, that'd be it. Yeah, Scotland.
God damn geography.
Yeah,
gets you every time.
Yeah. Oh, that's why I didn't recommend it.
Think
but do it in Edinburgh already.
I've got an idea for anyone who runs pubs out there. I think if you give in your mobile phone and they could charge it, that would be a good thing.
Mm,
that'd be good.
Then you should get a discount on all the beer and food. I think if the whole of the pub is mobile phone free, then that would create a better atmosphere. And if you want to keep hold of your phone, then that's fine, but you have to pay more. Because you're not contributing to the convivial atmosphere.
Yeah.
Did I tell you about when I got my phone nicked when I went to Marrakesh?
No.
So we were not... Just a little phone.
Yeah, yeah, that
side
was good.
Story.
Thanks for taking us off topic.
I was with my friend in Marrakesh and our two children. And sadly, we were lost in the souk on the last day. And everyone had been to prayer. So suddenly we were just swarmed by loads and loads of people lost and beginning to just feel slightly stressed and didn't have a clue where we were. And I'd put my phone on purpose in my front pocket and I suddenly just felt something. And I don't know, subconsciously, I knew automatically what it was. And I literally spun round, right? And the man is literally, I'm like this. And the man is literally like that, like this with my phone. Mm. And I just snatched it back.
Oh, hardcore.
Wow. Wonder Woman.
My friend now calls me Ninja Sam and just went, fuck off.
Wow. Wow.
And ran off.
Come on, bit of respect.
He ran off.
Bit of respect, Sam. Learn the language.
Yeah.
Just learn the language.
Yeah, you should have got your little Berlitz guide out and gone, well, wait, just wait, wait.
I got it back.
Well done.
Yeah, well done.
Strong woman.
Yeah. Right.
Was he sexy, the guy?
No, he looked like a Moroccan chav.
Moroccan chav, okay.
Okay.
That's fine. You don't have to worry about that term.
Almost. Yeah. I don't think it was, but it was almost like a tracksuit, cap. Okay, anyway, I got my phone back. That's
good.
And so
but you
I'm
wouldn't
not...
be able to take it into the pub.
No, so how is that relevant to what we were talking about?
Because the phone's important.
Okay.
I think, just mild phone separation anxiety.
It's a weird one, isn't it?
Walk into a pub, a restaurant, any public place now. I tell you what, the Tube is a very good one. Watch how many people are just engrossed in their phone.
But you can't even get messages on the Tube, right?
But people still scroll
Games.
Through. I don't know what they're doing. But I do think it's a problem. I do think it's a social issue, and I think
I don't think you're alone. I think there's
yeah, no, I mean this is not a new idea, but I'm creating.
I saw something
a solution
on my phone
for
the other day about it.
Exactly. I'm trying to create a solution for it, and I think the pub, which has been struggling, should give people discounts if they give their phone in.
That's good. I've always said about you, Ben. Apart from our business and making it a success, you solve a lot of problems.
Yeah, I do.
So you are a problem solver.
I take problems and I create solutions.
Yeah.
And I think I've done that.
Yeah.
So I think the pub world should learn from us. And I think the Middle East should learn from us as well because we
give
are
a piece of chance. Ben.
Yeah, give peace a chance. So that's that. So give drinkers who give in their mobile phones a discount and people will start talking to each other. The world will be better. And if you Instagram your drink or you Instagram your food, unless you're in it for business, you're a moron.
Oh,
and we don't even do that.
Listen to him. You caveated that so that we'd be safe.
Yeah.
But we don't
we
do
have
it
to.
It's boring.
It's boring. I can't stand it. Anyway,
do
so that's...
social media, said an agent sometime.
Yeah. Spit or swallow, done.
Well,
next we're doing
ding.
A tasting and Tom, you're up. What are you sampling this week?
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're listening to It's the Drink Talking.
I'm going to sample some Irish whiskey, to be sure.
How many are we sampling? Two?
We're going to sample two. The reason I'm doing it is just because we're a bit beyond St. Patrick's Day now, but in the build-ups of St. Patrick's Day...
Yesterday's news tomorrow.
Everyone was bothering us about features about St. Patrick's Day. Predominantly because it's a big drinking festival and Guinness is obviously what a lot of people turn to. But Irish whiskey is resurgent, so I found myself writing a lot about Irish whiskey, and I thought, well, as I've already done the hard work, I'll just cut and paste this into our podcast. So we're going to taste some Irish whiskey, and I think it's important to taste Irish whiskey. We talked about it a little bit in previous podcasts, I think, but it was the original whiskey. They were the original whiskey makers, a bit controversial for the Scots out there, but the history of Irish whiskey sees that they were making it as far back as the 13th century. Pot distillation. Yes, they got real form in terms of the history. They had the biggest whiskey industry in the world up until the early 19th century. Everyone who was drinking whiskey was drinking Irish whiskey. Scotch whiskey really wasn't a thing, apart from the fact that it was illicit up until the 1824, I think it was about,
it
right?
It was, yeah, it was. They finally passed the legislation
to make it legal. So up until that point, Irish whiskey was ruling the roost, and they decided to turn their back on a piece of technology called the Coffee Still, created by an Irishman called Enos Coffee, a column still, which was very useful for making a cleaner spirit quicker. They didn't want it. They wanted to stay with pot stills. They were passionate about it. John Jameson, he was one of the outspoken whiskey makers who said, I'm not going down this road. It makes a flavourless whiskey. The Scots embraced it, though, and that's when they started making blends.
Why did the Scots embrace it? Because it's cheaper.
Well, yeah, I just don't think they wanted to spend as much money.
It
was quicker, and it gave them a grain whiskey, which they used in their blends, and then blends took off. And at the same time, Prohibition in the 1920s was bad for Irish whiskey because that was one of their big core markets, America. And they lost that market. The Scots got ahead of them. And by the mid-20th century, there are two operational distilleries in Ireland after there being hundreds and it being a huge industry. So we don't really look at Irish whiskey so much these days because of that history. But actually, they were the pioneers of making it. And it is resurgent. And today we're going to talk about Midleton Distillery specifically. Now, there are lots of Irish whiskies to try, but I've just gone for one distillery and two examples of pot still whiskey from Midleton. Midleton is where they make Jameson whiskey, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
That.
The biggest Irish whiskey in the world, the most popular Irish whiskey in the world. And a great blended whiskey. Used to be made in Dublin, but is now made at the Midleton Distillery in Cork. That's a blend, but they also make pot still whiskies as well. And we're going to try Redbreast 21 and Midleton Barry Crockett. Now, these are, I should say, listeners, luxury whiskies and cost over £150 each.
What, for 75 cl?
No, for a full bottle, which you are not being exposed to because that's at my house. So I bought in very small samples for you guys because you're not worthy.
Thanks.
And look at
I
that.
I have got enough for you.
I can barely...
I've tasted it. I had to taste it to write about it, so I'm familiar with it. The difference between Irish whiskey and Scottish whiskey is that they use unmalted barley, which gives it a little bit more mouthfeel and flavour, a more grainy flavour. They also triple distill, so they go through three
times.
Spells. Thank you, Ben. Distillation.
I think there's a bit of oak in there.
Well, there should be a lot of oak in there because it spent over 21 years in a wooden barrel.
That is good gear.
Yeah, lovely. The unmalted barley in there is probably what makes it slightly more malty-ish.
Very floral on the nose, really.
Well, there should be quite a bit of vanilla in there because they've used ex-bourbon barrels, but they've also used first fill Spanish oak Oloroso, which might give it some of those sort of fruitier currant notes. I mean, they take whiskey from different barrels and blend it together, although it's a single pot still whiskey. And there are some whiskies in there that are older than 28 years. And this is what Middleton has done. It's been very careful about its wood management programme, carefully selecting the trees and the barrels that they use, and resting their whiskey from 30 years ago. So now we're starting to see lots of really stunning luxury-aged whiskies coming from Middleton and increasingly other distillers, Teelings in Dublin.
That is delicious.
It really is very, very drinkable.
I don't know what it is. You probably don't either, because it's just in my head what I'm thinking. But, Tom, there seems to be a distinctive character to Irish whiskey. I reckon I can tell an Irish whiskey from a Scotch whiskey quite easily, and I don't know what that is because it's
unmaltedness.
Yeah,
is it the unmaltedness? Because I think Irish whiskey for me sits between bourbon and Scotch.
They use a lot of American oak.
Okay.
So the next one we're going to taste is the Barry Crockett, and that is unseasoned American oak casks again. Whereas this one probably slightly offset with some of that sherry oak to sort of balance it a little bit more. The Barry Crockett is more the American oak, so you're going to really taste it in this one.
Okay.
So this is even oakier?
Not even oakier, just more of the American expression of oak.
And is it the same price? Is it the same quality?
The same price. So the Barry Crockett sells for £150 on the whiskey exchange, and the Redbreast is £153.
I prefer the Redbreast.
But it's a bit more of an accessible price, and then you can start to explore the single pot Irish whiskies. I agree, £150, it's not for every listener out there, but Barry Crockett is named after the former master distiller at Middleton, who was a ledge all round and started launching these Middleton rare expressions. Every year they have a new rare whiskey that they launch, which is invariably fantastic. And he was born in the distiller's cottage. He's got a lot of history associated with Middleton, and he'd made very good whiskey, but he's retired now, so good luck to him. I hope he's drinking. But if you do get into these, I would also try the Middleton Dare Gaelic Tree 7, and that's the Tree 7.
It's Tree 7,
which is 57.9% ABV.
Wow.
That's spent 15 to 22 years in American oak. But they finish that in virgin Irish oak, which is taken from the Grinsel wood, which is starting to explore woods. And that's what they're doing now at Middleton. They're looking at how they've best used American oak, but they're starting to explore different wood expressions.
You just taste it forever. I think
the Barry Crockett could do with a drop of water to open oak. It's definitely got... Tight.
What was the ABV on the Barry Crockett's? 46%, and so is the 21-year-old.
In that case, 46% is incredibly smooth. And they're both great, very, very complex.
And Irish, not a lot of people think about Irish whiskey when they go into their whiskey cabinet.
No.
But Irish
it's
whiskey
something
is
that's very much it's a burgeoning scene, isn't it?
Massively.
Yeah.
They reckon there's going to be another 20 distilleries opening over the next 5 or 10 years over there. So, yeah, it's one to keep an eye on. Buy up this stuff now because, you know, some of these limited releases are going to be worth a hell of a lot more in 10 years. So buy it or just drink it. I just drink it.
Well, it's interesting. That's great because I used to go out with a girl who was from that part of the world. She was a really nice girl, very interesting, very funny. My mum liked her, my friends liked her. But
why did you split up with her?
Well, it was a bit frustrating.
She split up with him.
Well, no, it was just a bit frustrating in the bedroom.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because
why?
You know what I say?
No.
You can take the girl out of Cork. Anyway. I think that brings
us round neatly
to the next section of the show, which is, as ever, Legends of Liquor. And this week it comes from Sam Beautiful Eyes Caporn. Who have you got this week?
I have got Robert Mondavi.
Oh, I know his.
Do you know his name?
The African leader.
No.
No.
Mugabe. Robot Mugabe. Robert Mondavi, he's Californian.
Correct. Ding.
He's involved in wine.
Yeah.
Ding.
He's rich.
Ding ding.
Handsome. Oh.
But he's deceased.
So he's dead.
He's dead.
He's dead.
He died at a ripe old age of 94.
Oh,
so
okay.
Don't feel
good
too
lad.
Bad for him. So Robert Mugabe was Robert Mugabe.
Does Robert Mugabe make wine?
Robert Mondavi was a really interesting pioneer of the Californian Napa wine scene. So when he started out, there weren't, you know, the highway and the tours around the vineyards and the wineries. He very much put Napa on the map. And also as well, he championed varietal labelling. So in Europe and particularly, you know, France everywhere, you've got Sancerre, which is Sauvignon, and in you know, Bordeaux, you've got to learn what the grape varieties
They're
are.
Deliberately bamboozling us.
It does bamboozle the consumer. But here, he really was just championing putting the grape varieties on the label. So I think that's really helpful, and it's something that everyone just completely takes for granted now. So basically, yeah, he's basically a leading California sort of like winemaker and owner, and also a massive philanthropist because he earned so much money. So I used to work for a company called Constellation when I worked there, but it's actually now called Accolade, and they bought the Mondavi winery in I think 2004 for $1.36 billion dollars in cash. I think they had quite a few debts, whatever, but it's a really famous winery and they make beautiful wines, and they also produce Opus One with the Rothschilds, so one of the most, you know, recognised expensive wines. I've been to tasting at Opus One.
Yeah. Is it good?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Is it quite fancy?
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah.
Does it have a does it have like a badge on the bottle?
No.
This is white.
What does it look like?
It's kind of got like a blue edge. It's white, very quite classy, quite understated. And I think it's got the profile of two people on it. I guess one is
Mondavi
and the other is Baron Philippe de Rothschild.
And why? I mean, why? Why is it so good? What's the...
So, I mean, it's just, you know, the best grapes, oak, age. It's just, I mean, like anything, it's obviously at that price, it's supply and demand. I mean, this is 250 quid a bottle. It's very expensive.
It's not
wine.
That.
But no, it's lovely. And we...
says the man who never spent more than £6.
£3.99.
My husband and I, in fact, we got engaged in California. Have I ever told you I won a trip, basically? And we ended up going to California. And flew into LA, stayed at the Beverly Hills Wheelchair, where my husband proposed. And then we went to like Vegas and up to Yosemite and then up to Napa and finished San Francisco. And we did have an amazing trip visit to Mondavi and to Opus One, where at the time I was working in a wine magazine. And so I got the full press treatment. So it was lush.
Yeah, it's a bit cheap using your wine trip to
propose.
And this is coming from someone who was a drinks trip and I proposed to my
wife. I
flew her over. I'd been flown over free.
We all proposed in America.
Are you kidding?
Did we? Yeah, I was at the top of the...
Rockefeller.
Rockefeller, yeah.
Are you? Yeah. Where were you?
Well, I was going to do it in Seattle, but it was too cloudy.
Why...
I won't cast. Okay. And then I'm going to do it in Portland, but for reasons I can't go into. Yeah. They're not rude, it's boring. Yeah. I can do it there. So in the end, I proposed on a crazy golf course behind a pub. It was not what I would have chosen, but it worked. It was
it's
fine.
It's actually really nice.
And I lost it. Yeah, it's minimum. It's a brilliant place.
Yeah.
But it was. We walked back into the bar with the golf clubs, and the guy goes, "How was it?" And I was like, "Yeah. We just got engaged.
Free drinks?
Nothing.
Not in a free round of golf?
I was just carrying on drinking.
I'll raise you that.
They just took the golf clubs off me and went, oh, good.
Well, at least they let you...
And then this drunk couple sort of went, congratulations, but that was it. It was rough.
At least they let you drink in there. So we did the top of the Rockefeller. And then I think I'd even reserved a table in the Rainbow Rooms, which is the bar where Dale DeGroff served up the Cosmopolitans and reinvigorated cocktail culture in New York in the 90s. A Cosmopolitan, you'll like that, Sam, you're a lady. Sex in the City
it's
and
good
all
for
that.
Bit.
We did that and we went downstairs. So I got to the door and there was a man on the door. It's like we're coming in. I've just proposed to my wife. We're coming in for a bottle of sparkling. And he said, you can't come in, you're not wearing shoes. You're not wearing shoes in this day and age.
Were you wearing trainers?
Yeah. So I was, wasn't barefoot.
They're Converse.
Well, exactly. So I had to run downstairs to Fifth Avenue and buy a pair of shoes to get into this bar.
How much were expensive shoes?
No, they were in Aldo. I bought them 50 quid. Good. But it doesn't matter. Like, scumbags, what is wrong with you?
That is.
Well, we actually were in our hotel bedroom. With a bottle of champagne.
Oh, okay.
On the balcony.
Nice.
Yeah,
See, that's to do with summer safe.
What happened?
And you know you're going to get some action straight away.
Did you
do it next to a bed.
Did you give out straight away?
I think it was actually post-action.
Oh. What? And you still... That's pretty good.
Well, yeah. You got what you wanted.
Yeah. So, but then it was hilarious. Cause I don't know if you boys found this, but I think my husband found it quite stressful. So obviously he'd been planning this. He'd designed the ring, had the ring all sorted, and I didn't have a clue what was happening. And so he was terrified. I think it was going to get, you know, discovered going through customs and whatnot. So we got to the hotel. And I think because we'd won this trip, we did tend to get the skankiest rooms in all the hotels. We had to moan at every single hotel for an upgrade. And we finally got this really gorgeous room. And then unpacked, sat around.
Sam, it's
not a drinks podcast.
Sam
anymore.
just said unpacked in inverted commas. Does that mean then, had sexy time?
I think it might have done. And then basically, as soon as he proposed, he basically just completely, I didn't get a word out of him for about 2 days. I think he was so emotionally drained from the experience. We sat at dinner and he literally was just, he was like catatonic.
It's horrible.
Maybe just terrified.
There's just
so many
implications. So like Claire was in a taxi, we were going to the Rockefeller and she was getting car sick. You know?
Not now.
And then just as we got in the lift to go up to the top, a school party of like screaming teenagers was getting in the lift behind us like, can't get on one knee on the top of the Rockefeller with all these bell ends here. It's just the whole thing was just
quite stressful.
So there you go, ladies.
Should have done it on a golf course. Wasn't expected.
Yeah. I find it's going to be a struggle now to get this back to Robert Rondardi. Have I said enough?
No. I mean, I think he's been misunderstood. I think, you know
they were right to take the lamb back.
Yeah.
But I've got one more thing to say about Mondavi. So basically, he set up his own winery, amazing guy. He literally put Napa on the wine map because he focused. He'd been to Bordeaux and seen how amazing Cabernet Sauvignon could be. And he really focused on that. And he really wanted to bring kind of fine wines and quality to Napa Valley. So he really kind of was massively pioneering in that regard. He also created oak-aged Sauvignon, and he called it Fumé Blanc. So, like, if you ever see... And it's lovely, actually. It comes in, it used to come in a beautiful bottle, like a big burgundy bottle. And so it's basically, oak Sauvignon, which I love. And he just was a total legend, and also a philanthropist, and so a really good guy. He died in May 2008, aged 94, and his wife... Margaret died in 2016 at age 91. And he really believed that wine was a part of gracious living and that, you know, wine and culture was a really important part of life. And he sponsored lots of art projects and lots of artists would come to the winery.
And when did he...
Ed thinks we met him, but I'm not sure we ever did.
That's less of a useful anecdote.
Something great, But basically, he's a total and utter iconic legend.
But not so iconic that you can remember whether you met him or not.
We had drunk quite a lot of
time. Yeah, right. Met him.
Did I meet him?
Not sure.
Well, Ed thinks we did, and I'm positive we didn't, basically. Because I would have remembered.
And he was catatonic anyway after... When was he sort of operational? Was it?
So he started operating 1966.
Okay, so he's part of that whole kind of West Coast foodie sort of artisan thing that was going. So what was it called? Muriel's Kitchen, was it? Was that one of them?
I know what you mean. I think they got one in London.
Yeah.
But basically, in the 40s, his father bought a winery, the Charles Krug Winery, which he joined with his brother. But then he and his brother had a massive falling out because Robert Mondavi wanted to go in a different direction and create real kind of fine wine. So then he left and founded the Robert Mondavi Winery in 1966 with his sons, Michael and Tim, and then started making really fine wines. But then they set up the Woodbridge Winery, which was for slightly sort of better value wines. And I think Robert Mondavi always regretted the fact they went in that direction.
Every time you're still saying Mondavi. It's just so much.
Sounds like Mugabe.
Yeah, I don't know.
Mondavi.
Yeah.
And then
Mugabe making wine.
But apparently Mondavi always slightly regretted their change of strategy. They set up a winery in Lodi as well, where you basically get cheaper fruit, and they concentrated a lot on sort of the Woodbridge, more entry-level wines. And that towards the end of his life, he really was trying to steer things
people
back
like
to
Tom.
Fine wine. Yeah, people just like Tom, exactly. Target
market. Only when it comes to wine.
So that's my legend liquor.
Well done,
absolutely
Sam.
Iconic chap.
I like him.
Robert,
I think he's been misunderstood.
I like him. Millions wouldn't.
Yeah.
In fact,
I think we should, in May, I might buy a Mondavi wine.
In honour of his 10-year R.I.P. penis.
Well done.
Nice.
So,
it's lovely. Lovely.
Lovely. And great marriage tales, guys. Mm. I think that was a beautiful diversion. So that brings us to the end of this week's podcast. It was yet another cracker. I think we can all agree. Thank you, as ever, Sam.
Welcome.
You're wonderful. Tom, you were brilliant.
Oh, thanks,
as were you,
They're both looking beautiful. Lovely eyes.
Eyebrows.
Good eyebrows.
Yeah.
And we will see you next week. Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.
This was a Grand Cru podcast from 7 Digital.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.